This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show and that's Jam Software. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, good evening.
Hi, good evening indeed. Well, afternoon here.
Afternoon, evening, what's the difference?
We are on the countdown for the end of school. We have 31 days left. It's fantastic.
We got 10 weeks left. It's not fair.
One
of them's holiday. And I've also got to go on a school trip this week, next week, so I am terrified.
Yeah, that's always fun.
I haven't been a school trip in years. But I volunteered to do this one because my exams are finished before most of the other secondary teachers. So I was the person who was the freest to go and do that, so... Lucky me. Exciting.
Yep. So I started getting some of our gear in. Mm-hmm. It's fun how they come through. I don't know if anybody buys things online from the Apple Store. You get like the email, like from the education store, like the email shipping notice. And all your gear just like comes in like that as it ships. Mm-hmm. And it just says lease when it says order number. And so like what I got in so far is my new iPad. And then I got in our Belkin keyboards. But what's crazy is they came and, like, you can tell Apple just, like, drop shipped them. Like, they probably just had them in their warehouse, mm-hmm. and they didn't, we bought 20 of them. So they just sent us 5 boxes of 4 of them, and they're, like, kind of in, you know, very plain boxes, which is great. It's fantastic. And what's awesome is, like, I don't know if any of you guys use the app called Deliveries to track packages, mm-hmm. but you can forward emails into it. And so the way Apple's... shipping notices work, they like will send you every tracking in one single email. Well, forwarding deliveries has a like email forwarding system where you can forward emails into your shipping like kind of tracking thing, but it detects all of those and will like kind of parse them out. And so forwarding one email will then give me 6 tracking things in delivery so I can see where everything's at. So it's really, really fantastic.
Nice.
So the keyboard is really, really neat. It is... Again, like this is not a keyboard I would say is the hot keyboard that you're buying for your coffee shop usage of your iPad.
Which model is this? Is this the Belkin?
Yeah, it's the Belkin one, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's a Belkin. It has a stand on it, and then it has a lightning cable for connections. So, and it's kind of thick, and it has the keys like have a long depress, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking for like a, you know, this is not a sexy keyboard for, again, the coffee shop. This is, I'm going to have 20 of these going at a time in a classroom or 15 at a time in a classroom. I need it to be easy to set up and easy to use for students, you know, of all ages. And so, again, it's kind of thick, but for our purposes, it's fantastic. I love the fact that it has a lightning port because there's nothing to, no pairing to worry about. I don't have to like, you know, that, I mean, if you think about some of my classes are 45 minutes. Like, if I'm trying to pair keyboards, mm-hmm. like, there's the class.
That's going
to
drive you nuts. Yep.
Yeah, so it just love it. Love it. So fantastic. Big fan of them. I think they're like retail for like $70 a piece. So they're not the cheapest in the world, but we were willing to. I only bought 20 of them. So I'm obviously not buying one for our entire deployment.
Yeah.
But new iPad. This is the iPad Air 9.7 inch, 128 gigabyte.
iPad Pro?
iPad Pro. Yep. My keyboard has not come in yet, so that's what's considered to be on allocation, which means they don't have any in the warehouse of the education customers right now.
Mm-hmm.
So waiting that to ship. But new iPad is fantastic. It is extremely light, very, very powerful, and big fan so far. This is the first time I've used an iOS device heavily since iOS 9 came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first experience with multitasking and day-to-day use works very well. I find that I still probably stick with one app at a time for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great iPad.
Yeah, I think with a 9.7 size, you're probably spending most time in one app. Whereas on the 13-inch iPad Pro, you're probably spending a lot of time in multitasking. You can quite comfortably sit in that mode for a very long time, whereas on the 9.7, it's a bit more kind of in and out.
Yeah, like I had an email open and I needed to copy some links off a website. So I just, you know, drug in Safari, copy link, paste, copy link, paste, copy link, paste, get rid of the browser.
Yep. Yep.
Instead of like having to double tap and all that. Another thing about the Belkin has some great keyboard shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
So it has like one to go. Obviously, Command Tab works, and then it has just one to send you back to the home screen as well. So, yeah, really, really fantastic so far. What else?
What do you think about the True Tone display?
You know, I've not used it outside yet, so it's hard to say from that. But it is the best display I've ever looked at.
Really?
Now, I do have a new Mac for me coming next week. It's a 13-inch MacBook Air. Or, I'm sorry, Retina MacBook Pro. Can't even get my products straight today.
Too many products now.
Too many products. And so, but it's really, really bright, and it just looks fantastic. And so it asks you about True Tone when you going through the wizard, like the setup wizard, mm-hmm. and it says, like, you would enable this, and then you can say, show me what it looks like without it, for example. So it kind of, you know, it doesn't assume that you want it, but again, happy with it so far. Very, very happy with this iPad so far. Very, very light. Just ready for my keyboard and my pencil to come in.
That seems to be the main thing that people are saying about the new Pro, the 9.7 Pro, is the screen is just amazing. And that's something that I'm very interested in because, you know, when you're one-to-one school, you senior kids in particular spend a lot of time using their screens. And the other thing I'm quite interested in is the lower reflectivity, because it's always been something that's quite difficult in built environments that weren't designed for computers as such. You know, our building is quite old. So screen reflections are something that can be annoying at times. And any device that can help with that is very welcome.
Also got to use an iPhone SE this week for the first time.
Okay.
We had an employee get one randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever temptation I had to switch to that was squelched when I could not type in his email address to set up his email. I guess you would get used to it again, but it really shows that iOS, like the modern iOS 7 on keyboard, was made for bigger screens.
It seems to me like it would take some work to go back to. I mean, I was like you, sort of flirting with the idea of the iPhone SE, and I had to wipe my daughter's iPhone 5, and so I installed some of my own apps and tried it for a little bit, and it was hard to get used to. I mean, I think I probably could get used to it, but the question is, do I want to? You know, and I think one of the things that I was surprised about was when I went to take photographs. That was the thing that I found actually probably more unpleasant than the keyboard, was that the viewfinder for my photographs was so small compared to what I'd been used to on the 6 Plus. So I think it would be I personally find it a difficult sell to go back, but I'm interested in maybe going to an iPhone 6 size for the next one, but we'll see. The next one's some time away anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, probably this fall. So I don't know what I'll do. I'll probably get on to T-Mobile's Jump On Demand.
Mm-hmm.
Plan so where I can switch phones multiple times a year. That I'll do that, but I'll probably end up with the big one again.
Probably. Yep. We sort of fired the starting gun in our redeployment as well. You know, now that the Pro is a known quantity and so on, and we actually kind of had a change of heart since we last talked about what we might do with our deployment next year. Just talking to teachers in the primary department and so on. A lot of them were saying that they were quite enthusiastic for the iPad Mini, which I had previously not really thought about as a serious contender. So we're looking at the possibility of actually splitting the deployment. I know, like, for years in this show, I've been saying, you know, don't do that, or we're not going to do that. But what's changed really is that the school is now full, so we're not going to be getting large numbers of new pupils into any year group as a sort of surprise. Like the progression through the school will now be a little bit more of a known quantity. So I know that if I split, the first 4 years get iPad Minis and the remaining years get iPad Pro, let's say. I know with some certainty now how many are coming into the upper group, so what size that group's going to be over the next 3 years. And then the only unknown, or the known unknown, if you like, is how many pupils will come into the primary one at the start. I know how many are coming next year, so it's only for the last 2 years of the deployment do I have a question mark over how many iPad Minis I would need, basically, when the split would be at least reasonably predictable, because the school is full and the pipeline is sort of established at that point.
How old is your school at this point?
We are, 1999 was the year we opened our doors, so what's that? 17 years, something like that. Yep.
That was time for the 20-year anniversary.
Well, we did a little bit for 15 years. We weren't all that sure we were going to get there. When we started, you know, it was... I mean, starting up a school is... You know, we should probably do a show about that at some point. But those were fun days back then. I have a lot of memories of, you know, trying to set up an ISDN line for the school and using an original Apple Graph 8 base station with a modem in it to try and do on-demand dial-up to the internet when somebody tried to get something off the internet. Those were heady times. And I was kind of reminiscing with Stephen Hackett's quest for multicolored IMAX, because those were the first machines that we ever bought for the school. We had four. We had a tangerine one, we had a blueberry one, we had a lime one, and we had a strawberry one. And I threw them all away. I could have sent them all to Stephen. But yeah, that was our early days. And we had, you know, I mean, even in 1999, we had a common desktop login environment back in 1999, when most schools in the area were using like a PC on a trolley with a box of floppy disks as their multi-user system. So we've always been kind of out there on the edge, and now it's all mobile, it's all wireless, it's one-to-one, it's iPad, it's Apple Pencil, it's 4K cameras on the back, all that kind of stuff. Crazy how far we've come.
Yeah, in such a short amount of time, in reality.
Yeah, well, I was thinking today, you know, I was helping out another school, and this school was in a situation where they were using the free Meraki MDM, so they were excluded from a large number of features, and they also weren't set up for volume purchase either. So I was kind of rehearsing my deployment techniques from years ago about how you would go about, you know, installing apps through iTunes and all that kind of stuff. And even just in the 6 years that we've been doing iOS, where we've come from in iOS versus what's possible now. If you have the full stack, which we do, you know, device enrollment program, high quality MDM, Apple Classroom, iTunes U, managed Apple IDs, all these new things that have come along. It's a really, really powerful stack now. Very, very interesting what we can do with it in the next deployment.
Yeah, so many things I'm fighting with at the end of the year. I'm thinking this will be a lot easier next year. This will be a lot easier next year. This will be a lot easier next year.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to having a deployment with no single machine that needs to talk to these devices.
Yeah, it's nice. I've got a couple of device enrollment machines here, iPads, and just having these things be autonomous and talk to the cloud, and that's the way it should be.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor for the night, the fine folks at Jemp Software. Just actually renewed my license for them for another 4 years and got my codes today. So they are a great partner for your Apple deployments in your schools or in your businesses. Work with all Apple products. They have a cool app for teachers called Cast for Focus that allows teachers to kind of take control of their deployments with their iPads. You can distribute iBooks, you can select a specific Apple TV, you can initiate AirPlay, you can quickly get a student's attention. So if you're rolling out your iPad deployments or your Mac deployments, check out the Casper Suite from Jamp Software. We're big fans of that here at Out of School, and you can learn more about them at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. So the topic for tonight, as we continue with our deployment series, is disaster recovery and backup. And I guess we should really look at that reverse.
Yeah, because ideally you want to have done the backup before you have to do a disaster recovery, right?
Yeah, and so the main thing, you know, on iOS is the iCloud backup. Mm-hmm. There are probably no schools that are doing iTunes-based backups at this point, and there is no way to use a third-party backup system with iOS where it can actually, over the air, restore.
Yeah.
Now, there's some caveats with iCloud backup. We still don't have clarification on storage amount for managed Apple IDs, because these education features, even on 9.3, are still technically under beta. So we've not had that clarified. I've pinged my Apple rep. They don't know. I mean, at least my rep doesn't know. And Apple School Manager has not yet shipped. Apple Classroom has shipped, but Apple School Manager has not shipped. And so it's going to be a busy summer over you know, Apple HQ. I would not want to be the project manager or the guy that's handling all of this.
Yeah, you're definitely on a deadline there. I mean, what's beta and what's not currently is a little bit confusing, because Apple hasn't really labeled anything as beta or not. But Apple Classroom is obviously 1.0. That's in the store. It's a shipping application now, as are the Apple Classroom support features in MDM. So Casper have shipped Casper 9.9 and just yesterday 9.91 to support Apple Classroom. So Apple Classroom and iOS 9.3 are basically production software. But Apple School Manager is not even in beta for anywhere outside the US right now. So if you're in the US, you can actually sort of get set up on Apple School Manager. But in the UK, I can't even enroll for it right now, because the country pop-up only has United States in it. So that's still very much in private test. Managed Apple IDs are still in private test. And what was the other thing? Managed Apple ID, Apple School Manager, Classroom, Well, those are the main ones, aren't they?
Yeah, because DEP is, it's already out now, but it's just kind of the, I would say DEP 2.0.
The rest of that stuff is getting folded in as well. So DEP and iTunes U Public Site Manager, I think, is also going into Apple School Manager, but that's not there yet. So we don't know. I mean, I don't know if anybody's made an app, a managed Apple ID outside of Apple yet. I don't know anybody who's done that. Maybe some people have, but it's the kind of thing where you might get to make them in beta and they've got 5 gigs, and then, you know, when everything comes out final, Apple throws a big switch and says, okay, everybody's got 40 gigs or whatever. We don't know yet. And that's the thing that's kind of the limitation for iCloud Backup is it's fine as long as you don't use it too much. 5 gigs is okay if you just have like your Keynote files and your Pages documents syncing through it. But to do your full device backup with full fidelity, including the camera roll, is something that is, for most kids, they can easily blow beyond that limit quite easily.
Yeah, and then we'll kind of discuss some options around that later. If we don't, we do end up getting 5 gigabytes only. Now, I think one of the things to understand, and this has been something I've had a lot of people kind of that we've discussed, is the differences between iCloud Backup and iCloud Sync.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, an app syncs its data over iCloud.
Yep.
That does not necessarily mean that it's inside of your iCloud backup. So, and the reason this is important is because with device-based app assignment that's possible now, those apps, the backup is not included in the iCloud backup because those apps were not assigned to the Apple ID.
Yeah, and this is potentially problematic, and I think this has maybe made me cool off a little bit on device assignment because if that data is not getting backed up, then what else are you supposed to do? And Apple's documentation on this is a little bit kind of vague. It's like, well, developers should put their data in the cloud somewhere. But what Apple's basically done there, I think, as they've said, sort of like, developers, you sort it out, right? Which is a nightmare, right? How are they going to do that, right? Are they going to, you know, are you going to sign up for a cloud sync account for every app you've got? You know, no. So I think for me, the way I'm looking at device-based assignment now is it's fine for students whose data I can happily lose. And there's not many students in that category, but like 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, yeah, I could probably live with their data being lost. But, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, and certainly in secondary school, no, I can't live with them losing their data because they're working on projects, they've got iTunes U configuration, they've got all kinds of stuff that I want to have backed up and restored as easily as I can.
The best I can tell, if the app supports like iCloud Sync, that data should still be there.
Yeah, so if you device assign Pages, for example, and there's a working Apple ID on the device, but the app is device assigned, then your Pages documents could sync through iCloud and therefore be available when the restored device comes along and reconnects to that iCloud account. But then here's a question, right? If you have a working Apple ID on that device, why would you want to use device assignment anyway? Why not use assignment to that Apple ID?
So that's true.
So I suppose in one way it makes sense, which is that if you can make managed Apple IDs for everything, and therefore everybody has their own managed Apple ID, and they maybe have more iCloud space than is normal, it would just make sense to use Apple ID based assignment for everybody because you can easily make them. I mean, that was one of the main reasons for using device assignment was that it was such a pain in the backside to make Apple IDs. That this was a way in which you could deploy apps without having to go through all that pain of getting whitelisted and sitting through iTunes for hours and clicking on buttons. But I think really in a post-managed Apple ID world, device-based assignment is really for devices that aren't really used by people. Does that even make sense as a phrase? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an app that, you know, is given to a field engineer. There's maybe 2 apps on it. Both of those apps are connected to some back-end system and there's no real state on the device. You know what I mean? Like if you're using Salesforce or something, and that was what your iPad was for, was just to use Salesforce or to look at manuals for products that you service out in the field. And if you destroy the iPad, then you just create a new one and no data really has to be restored. That really, to me, I'm starting to understand that's where device assignment is. And if you're dealing with a school and you're dealing with people who are making data, then you want to be using managed Apple ID and Apple ID based assignment. So I think I've kind of changed my mind from what we said earlier about device assignment. I don't think it's necessarily the right thing for schools.
Yeah, that's what we do the show. We all learn in the process.
That's it. We're learning live on the internet.
So again, that's the key to understand is the difference between iCloud Backup and iCloud Sync. So your Pages example was a good explanation. But if something like literally just lives in the app, then it would need to restore that with the iCloud Backup. Now, some of the things that are different on iOS 9.3, which we covered last week, is restoring is much easier now from a backup. You can do an inline iOS update, and you have two-factor authentication on your Apple ID, which I don't know, would be tricky for students to roll out, but it's an encrypted restore, so it remembers most of your passwords.
Yes, it does. And what is happening though, right? See with two-factor authentication, if you have a device enrollment program set of devices, right, and those are institutionally owned, what I believe Apple's going to do is they're going to use the DEP status of the iPad as the second factor in two-factor authentication. So when it comes to managed Apple IDs, right, every managed Apple ID is going to be a two-factor authentication Apple ID by default. But the reason is because all your devices are in DEP. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because the iPad, unlike an iPhone, the iPad can be trusted because there's been a chain of custody all the way from the Apple factory to the school, which is that's the promise of DEP, right? Is that chain of custody from the factory to the school on a recognized purchase order, and then from there into the hands of the pupil. And therefore, that's been professionally managed all the way through, and that can be trusted as a second factor. And that's my understanding of where managed Apple IDs are going to go. So it is potentially possible that you could have a full fidelity backup and restore with a managed Apple ID if you've got enough iCloud space on iOS 9.3. And that would be a nice place to get to.
So the next thing we want to cover with, we talk about backup, we want to talk about disaster recovery, because it's going to happen.
Yep.
So there are two things, two terms you want to figure out here is recovery and repair. Mm-hmm. Recovery is getting the data to a spare. So student brings you an iPad that's been broken over the weekend. You need to get that data onto a new iPad quickly. Repair is getting the broken one fixed.
Recovery has traditionally been the bit that is a massive pain in the butt on iOS because there's so much local state on the device that getting all to the cloud and getting it back from the cloud can sometimes be quite a long process. Here's somewhere that can be a big win here. Caching server. Caching server in El Capitan, I believe, server 5.1, I think it is, maybe, or 5.2, now has the ability to cache your personal iCloud data onto the caching server before it goes to the cloud. And that way that the restore is only happening across the local network, for your personal documents and things and your photos, rather than all coming down over the internet again. So again, caching server has grown in importance over time. Bradley, I don't know if you've listened to the Mac Admins podcast. It's just a new podcast that's just started.
No, I haven't.
They had a great discussion in episode 2 about caching server. And one of the really good points that was made by my pal Tom Bridge, who's one of the hosts on that show, is that caching server, if you have personal data on it, right? This is in light of the FBI situation. If you have a user's personal data on the device and there comes some legal problem with that user, the law enforcement may come and they may want to either take a copy of or actually take away your caching server. And the point that Tom was making on that show was that if your caching server runs other really critical services on your network and the FBI come and take your caching server away for investigation because there's maybe personal data in an iCloud backup on that device, your network might be in trouble if that was also happened to be your mail server or your wiki server or something. So one of the recommendations he was making was to possibly think about separating out your caching server from any other service on your network and having a dedicated machine just for caching server, which is not something I'd thought about, but it seems like an interesting idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because I think you've seen that when data centers get raided, they take other things down. So if I have to repair, this goes from to Mac and iOS. If I have like model devices that I swap for repair. When I get the broken device repaired, I don't swap back. As long as like the device, the user couldn't really tell. Like it'd be one thing if it's like beat up or something. But I don't go through the hassle of swapping it back unless there's a specific reason. You just let them keep the, you know, spare, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do as well. You know, all iPads are essentially alike in our deployment. And this was one of the reasons why I didn't like to split the deployment, was because then if I do split the deployment, I need to think about having a stock of iPad mini spares and a stock of iPad Pro spares. You know, if you break your iPad Pro, do you get an iPad mini for a while or whatever? Like the cone of shame for a secondary pupil to be carrying around an iPad mini, I don't know. But yeah, there's no real reason to do that unless you're giving somebody a weaker device or something like that.
So the two terms we think about when we think about recovery and repair is mean time between failure and mean time to repair. Mean time to failure is how long you go between devices actually breaking.
What you find here is that there's really two kinds of things that can happen, right? In an iPad deployment, basically you either break the screen or something else goes wrong with the device. And the something else is typically quite a rare situation to happen, but screen breaks are essentially random, right? They're the result of random accidents that might happen. But otherwise, apart from screen breaks, most iOS devices are incredibly reliable. I estimate that our mean time between failures, not including screen breaks, is more than 2 years for, you know, one of any of our devices to go bad of its own accord. In the current deployment, we had one device was bad out of the box in 2013. And then last week, I had my first spontaneous failure, which is one iPad started to refuse to charge its battery. And that was the first one that we'd had in 2.5 years from the first day of deployment in 2013. So apart from screen breaks, iOS device is incredibly solid. However, the mean time between failure on chargers and cables is a whole different story. And that's more like a year and a half before those things start to wear out. So that's something where we keep a separate stock of spares of chargers, spares of cables, and we just give them out if we need to. But those are kind of secondary. They're not like full failure of the iPad as such. They're just failure of one component.
Yeah, and those are fairly, $7 cable from Amazon Basics kind of thing. And I wouldn't recommend replacing them with like the $30 Apple cable.
Yeah, no, those are expensive. Other thing to be aware of, though, is that the mean time between failure is not constant for the lifetime of the device. Have you heard of the bathtub model?
No.
Of hardware failure. If you imagine cutting a bathtub in half, right, and looking at the edge, right, you have on the left-hand side, you have a high point that dips quickly down to a low point and stays low for the length of the bath, and then at the foot of the bath, jumps up quite sharply again. If you imagine that as a graph of number of failures over time, that's a reasonable model for how hardware behaves. You get a high number of early failures, right, devices that were bad from the factory, and then as your deployment beds in, you get rid of all those or repair those devices. And then the ones that survive the first 6 weeks, let's say, are likely to survive for the majority of your time. But as devices start to wear out, that rate of hardware failure starts to go up again. And that's why they call it the bathtub model. But it's a reasonable way to look at it. And that's something is my sort of concern about stretching out an iOS deployment to 4 years or 5 years is when is it that line starts to creep up again for iOS devices. Now, I don't think it's right on 3 years. I mean, you look at iPad 2s, for example, how many of them are still in the field? How many of them are still working? Yeah, their batteries are starting to wear out now, 5 years into the deployment of those devices. So maybe it's a five-year life cycle. I don't really have the experience to say there. But what I do know is that at the end of 3 years, certainly our iOS devices, our fourth generation iPads, are really in good shape. So I think their lifespan is about that length.
Yeah, we're going 4 years, so we'll see how I am doing.
Do report.
Like I said, this time in 3 years, I'll either be thinking I totally regret that, or yeah, it was a good move. Because it allowed us to get more devices. That's the big thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So meantime to repair. This is like the average time that it gets a broken device back in service. And here's the thing. This device is not as – or this stat is not as important if you have plenty of spares. So your focus should be getting a device in the user's hands first with their data. You know, then so you don't, you know, then you can take it to the Apple Store or ship it off or whatever you do, send it to your reseller. But this is like the amount of time if you have a device broken, how long does it take you to get it back? Is it a month? Is it a week? Is it 3 days? And this can impact the number of spares you need to have on hand. So if you've got, I don't know, I'm just going to throw a number. You know, if you're going to have, if you have 100 devices and you want to have 5 spares, well, if it takes you a month to get a device back, we're going to be really down to 4 spares at that time. So if you, you know, if you have a, you know, whatever reason you have a run on spares and you're going to have a lead time of a month, you could be hurting.
Yeah, you could be in trouble. You know, if you, let's say somebody drops a tray of 5 iPads and all your spares go out, then you're running with no spares for a month. Now, if I had a mean time to repair of 1 month, I would probably be running more than 5% spare capacity. I'd probably be running something like 10% or 12%. If you, on the other hand, if you have an Apple Store in the town where you live, your mean time to repair could be like 2 hours. You know, and that's assuming like you swap a device, then you immediately run to the store and get a new one. In which case, you might be able to run with a very small number of spares, maybe even just one. The problem with that is then as soon as you break one, you've got to immediately drop everything and go and get it fixed. Whereas if you have a slightly bigger cushion, then what you can do is you can you know, batch up maybe 2 or 3 broken ones and then go and get them all fixed in one go, which is what I tend to do at the Apple Store locally here. It's just half an hour up the road. I'll not get every single broken one replaced straight away, but when I realize that I'm down to nothing or down to maybe 1 or 2 spares, I'll take a day and I'll go and get 3 repaired or something like that, and then and that's how I would turn them over at that point.
Yeah, it's you know, determining how many spares you need is going to be from school to school, and there's 2 to 5% is a good amount on as a rule of thumb per school. But again, like we said, if you think your mean time to repair is going to be higher, then you might need to be thinking about higher. You need some spares.
Yeah, the two things play off against each other, right? If you have a very long mean time between failures, then you can afford to take a while getting your device repaired. Right? You don't need to have a very quick turnaround in repairs if you go a year between failures. But the thing about iOS, or I suppose any computer, is that screen breaks are essentially random. And you could have like 3 screens break in 1 week and then never break another screen until you refresh your devices. So you always have to bear in mind that there is a possibility you might have a run on breaks at some point. And we had that actually about a year ago, where I had like 3 kids came with a broken screen within 14 days. That's never happened to me before, and it's not happened to me since. But just for some reason, you know, 3 kids broke their screens that week. And that was a point where I was kind of like, okay, I better hurry up and get those all changed. Unfortunately, I could. But if you're not in a situation where you can, then you have to bear in mind that you're going to have that problem. If your mean time between failure is lower than your mean time to repair, you will literally never catch up. Things will be falling apart faster than you can get them repaired. That's a horrible situation to be in. But ideally, what you want is a high mean time between failures and a low mean time to repair. And that way, you know, you have a big, big cushion. And that's really where we found ourselves with iPad over the past 6 years, is that the mean time between failures was really pretty long. And the mean time to repair was quite short. So that's a nice and happy situation to be in.
One of the things that we alluded to earlier was a file storage system, which can potentially, depending on what Apple does with the iCloud storage for students, can be your saving grace if you use Google Apps. So Google Apps schools have unlimited Google Drive storage, and I have a user here that has like 9 terabytes, and it's still unlimited. So it clearly must mean unlimited. My rule, my advice would be, if you don't need something, offload it to Google Drive. And, you know, when you think about students that are entering, like let's say they go to a school that's 6 through 12, they get an iPad, and they may have like 2 to 3 iPads over their next years of school. When they're a senior, like what do they really need from their like 8th grade year? Probably not much. And so it's, to me, this is a year-to-year problem, or maybe even a semester-to-semester problem. Because if you're in, you know, 10th grade British Lit in high school, like, wait, the other random thing is, we have British Lit. Do you have American Lit classes in your?
Oh my goodness! No.
Yes, I had
no.
British. I had British lit, so that must be a compliment. It would, I actually had it my senior year, but it doesn't really matter. In my mind, this is a semester to semester problem. This is a if your classes are semester to semester, or even a year to year, and so this is where a 64 versus 32 comes in mind. A 64 gig, you're probably good for the entire year at least, because realistically, at the you could find things to delete most likely. I mean, again. Large keynote documents, you can probably delete those. Again, if you don't want to, and you're still limited to 5 gigs of storage, my advice is if you're a Google Apps school, throw it on Google Drive. You know, make a folder that says like, you know, work, you know, schoolwork archive. Put a folder in there, you know, 2013, 2014. Throw all your work in there. You can organize it if you want to. But just offload stuff to a file system. It's there. It's you can access it, but it's not on your device.
I mean, it's nearline storage for iOS devices, right? That's what Google Drive is, and it's stuff that you might want back, but you can take the 20 minutes or whatever it takes to download that file if you ever need to get back to that again. You don't have to have it live and there all the time. The way that we do this is my aim for the current deployment, which started in 2013, was that I was going to set those devices up in 2013, and I did not want to see those things back in my hands until this summer. And for the most part, that has worked. There's not been many situations where, apart from breakages and failures and so on, where kids have come to me and said, I have a problem with my iPad that means I need to, you know, have it completely restored from software. I mean, that's the thing about iOS, is the software is so stable that it's very rare you have to do a big software intervention on an iPad. But what we did was we don't reset the devices during the lease. So that's why I don't want to see them back in my hands. I just want the kids to manage it themselves, basically. And we're kind of there now. I had a look at it based on the kind of startup work we were doing for a refresh. My first thing I did was I had a look at how much data was being used on our iPads. And what I found was that on average, our 32 gig iPads are 50% full on average. Now, there's, of course, some people who are way above that, some people who are way below that. But on average, we're about half full. So to me, that says that even after 3 years of data accumulation, we're not really blowing past 32 gigs. So that's why I was thinking, you know, I'm not going for the 64 gig iPad Air 2 just because it's 64 gigs, because that's not the most important thing. But what we do is at the end of the lease, we'll take some time, I'll maybe take a week before the summer holidays here, to just have the kids go through their Keynote files, their Pages files, their photographs, their videos, and identify stuff they want to keep and upload them to Google Drive and just do that. So, but the nice thing about it is that, you know, say during the school year, I did a big video project or something. What I could do is I could say, well, we're going to run our iPads at 90% full for this whole time, and then when we're done, we'll just sort of open the release valve and all that data will just flood up to Google Drive. We can reclaim the space in our devices and we can get on with our lives. And I think what I've noticed is that kids are becoming much better at sort of self-managing that kind of process. And of course with iOS 9, it's become a lot easier to identify where your data is being used on the device and get rid of it in such a way. And enough kids have seen me doing it enough times to just be aware of how that's done as well. So that's how we do it. And I'm fairly sure that's how we're going to do it for the next one as well. And my hope is that if we do get greater or unlimited storage on managed Apple IDs, that will become a whole lot easier as well.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, if you're using things like the Google ecosystem on iPad, you don't even have this issue because it's directly stored in Google Drive as well. And so depending on what your makeup of devices, you know, of apps are, it may be a moot point. You know, what's crazy is like one of my kids has like a 16 gig iPad that's older. You know how much his free space is on that? Like our total usable space? Like 12 gigs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean iOS is getting quite fat, you know. It's not Windows class, you know, the whole thing about Surface, you know, half of the installable space was used up for Windows and Office. But I certainly noticed that when kids are getting close to full with their iPads, what it tends to be is kids who can install their own apps for the first time, installing a whole lot of games. And that's something that we encourage them to sort of think about it a little bit more. And, you know, the kids who sort of sheepishly come to me with their iPad full, they say, it's my games, isn't it? And I look at it and it's like 100 games on there. And I'm like, yes, it's your games. They're all going to have to go. So I think that's kind of where we are with file storage. I don't think that... It's not obvious to me that every people needs to have 64 gigs right now. I don't think that's true. 32 gigs, yes, for most kids. Maybe the youngest users could get away with 16. I'm surprised to even hear myself saying that, but maybe we could get away with that. If we are going to split our deployment, we could maybe do 16s for the youngest kids. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure I buy into the longevity of a 16 gig device over the next 3 years, but we'll see how that goes, and we'll make a decision one way or the other. Last thing I wanted to mention, Bradley, was your other unlimited storage space, which does come from Apple, which is iTunes U. And a lot of people don't really think of iTunes U in this way, but it is a very good option for places where teachers, in particular, can store large amounts of data that might need to be accessible to students. So if you were at Google Apps School, you know, using Chromebooks, what you do is you put all your stuff in a Google Drive folder, and then the kids could look at it in Google Drive. If you're an iOS school, the kind of equivalent process is like making an iTunes U course and putting your stuff in there. So, for example, I know of a school where all the PE teachers have got iPads, and what they're doing there is they have a lot of demonstration videos that they show to the kids who are doing like exam-level PE. And what they do is they've put all those videos, instead of putting them, like airdropping them to the students, they're putting them into iTunes U, where the students can stream that video from iTunes U, and Apple's not charging for that storage space. It's not limited in any way, as long as you're affiliated with an institution. And it saves eating up local storage on the device, and it's a really nice way to keep that data for students.
Yeah, this is, you know, I think you made you make a great point about there's the actual needs versus, and to me, there's a difference between needs and keeping it. What's the analogy? Needs versus making it like the device has unlimited storage. And so, like you said, it's usually something else. Like our teachers, their current laptops have 128 gigabytes. I've had teachers fill them up. Is that full of all work stuff? No. It'll be pictures, personal music. One of the things that's been surprising is like we sell digital copies of like all of our like Christmas programs and Grandparents Day programs. We sell them because we like have to pay a crew to come in to operate the live stream, operate the cameras, mm-hmm. and things like that. We do it upright. We have high def recordings. I email these out to our teachers for free. Well, these can be like 3 to 4 gigs because they're long, and so mm-hmm. like in their downloads folder will be like the 3 versions of the Christmas program based on the grade. You know, I guess we have 3. Mm-hmm. The grades are split up. And then we'll have like the Grandparents Day program. Well, you have that. So that's like you might have 10 gigs per year of that media. Well, like they leave us in the download folder for a couple of years, keep downloading. Like there's 30, 40 gigs of just Grandparent Day videos or school videos.
Yeah. And if you just empty the trash, you can recover another 15.
Yeah. And so it's.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're getting to the point where it's not that, if you have a 256 gig iPad Pro, you're literally never going to think about storage space again, really and truly. If you just say I gave them to the school kids, the iPad would essentially be unlimited for all intents and purposes. If you give them 32, that's not true. They do have to think about it a little bit, but it's not like you have to think about it every day of the school year. It's just occasionally you might find that, I've done something, I've downloaded some app that downloaded more data that ended up blown over my limit. And that's when you do have to think about it a little bit. So it's not like it never impinges, but it doesn't impinge every day. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot in terms of cost benefit at this point in the evolution of iOS devices.
Well, and I think the analogy I would use is a 64 and up allows users to be sloppy with how they manage their data.
Yeah.
They don't have to think about it. Like they can have iCloud Photos turned on, keep everything local. They don't have to even care.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly how I am with my. I've got 128 gig Pro, and I had like 25 raw episodes of our podcasts just sitting about in Ferry, and I undertook a project over the last week to kind of offload them all to Google Drive. But that was like 300, 400, 500, 600 megs of audio per episode. I had maybe 10 or 12 of them sitting there, I didn't care. And, you know, it was fine. But I realized that my 120K iPad was nearly full. So it was time to maybe start being tidy. But you're right, sloppiness would be the thing. You could have 50 games installed and nobody would care.
And so I have my iPad 128 gigs and 114 gigabytes of usable capacity. I have 107 gigabytes available. I mean, I honestly, if I had to, I could get by on 20 gig iOS devices because I am so heavy on streaming everything. Apple Music, Plex, Google Photos. I just don't keep much storage locally, but I like the convenience of it. Like my new laptop is a terabyte. I may only use 60 gigs of it, but I like the convenience of it.
Yeah, and occasionally you'll get special projects, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I had a situation where I had to produce a video that we were going to show about the school in a certain fundraising situation, and I just went around getting people to airdrop me more and more and more video files until I had way more than I needed, but then I could pick and choose from it, and that was it was nice to have that kind of spare space to do that without having to constantly juggle things in and out. And I think at the moment for me, anyway, in our school with what we do, I think 32 gigs is pretty much the sweet spot for storage right now. And it saves us having to go to 128 gig pros, which I don't know that we could afford that.
You're going to have to raise tuition.
Yeah, well, yeah. Working on
that. So that's kind of where we're at on disaster recovery, backup, and file storage. And so just something to think about. Hopefully we'll know more information this summer with the storage limits of the iCloud backups. And that'll be certainly nice. Again, especially if iOS as a whole can get better, and it's a lot better than it used to be about, you know, clearing up caches and leaving things on the server when needed.
Yeah, and I think developers are going to have to get a bit better about that in shared iPad world, because shared iPad does do some weird stuff with storage. You know, you can have that disappear from underneath your app sometimes. So that's something that developers need to just be careful about. Of course, the other thing to say whenever you talk backups is test your backups, right? And try and get together a checklist for how do we, in the deployment situation that we have, how do I go from here's a broken device to here's a restored device? How do I do that? And what are the steps? And make it a checklist, because when you're kind of in a hurry to get one of those things back, you're going to want to get that checklist in place and get it all set up so that when you have to do it for real, make it a practice thing. Practice it a few times. You know, take a couple of iPads out of your deployment, set one up, put some data on it, back it up to iCloud, and then try and restore that to another device and see how that goes. And just make sure you can do that.
Yeah, that's a good advice to leave it on today. I think we have maybe have one or two more episodes of our deployment series. So if you're just getting started with us, you can go back to the first of the year, and we have a whole, you know, 14, 15 episodes you can get started with. So we're getting to the point in our series where we're thinking about things you're dealing with in December and January where your deployment's up and running. My name is Bradley Chambers. I can be found on the web at chambersdaily.com and on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
You can find all of our website, all of our past episodes at outofschool.net. If you're listening on the web, you can subscribe in any common podcasting app, Overcast, the Apple Podcast app, Pocket Cast. Just search for Out of School and we'll be there. If you use the podcast app, we'd appreciate a rating. If you can take a minute to leave a good rating for the show, we'd appreciate that. We also have a Patreon page where you can support our show financially with $1 a month, $2 a month, $3 a month, $10 a month. And we'd appreciate that. We have a number of sponsors that do that, and they just throw some money our way, help us pay the hosting bills and put a few dollars in our pocket for Apple Pencils or new Lightning cables when ours break. And then if you sponsor at the $10 level or above, we actually get mention you on the show as well once a month as a personal thank you from us. But thanks for listening, and I hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see you next week.